It's time for Herd Mentality, the weekly episode where you control the discussion today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network. And I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Wednesday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by Ultimate Football GM. Have you ever dreamed of becoming an NFL GM and managing your football franchise? Then this game is definitely for you. To download the game, just visit ultimate-gm.com or look it up on the app stores. Our listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using promo code LOCKEDON in the game. Well, folks, if you're joining us on YouTube, you know that I am recording this from a hotel room, and I'm in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, and I'm actually going to be on the road for the next 2 weeks. So I'm in Mobile until Sunday, and then on Sunday I fly to Arizona for the Super Bowl festivities, and I'll be there for a week. So if you're part of our YouTube audience, I'm going to be in some different locations here over the next couple weeks. So not my favorite backdrop, right? Obviously a hotel room, but that's the world that we're living in right now because of the travel on my schedule with my job at thedraftnetwork.com, where the Senior Bowl is obviously a big week for us, and then the Super Bowl as well, where I'll have a bunch of content responsibilities down there. But Lockdown Bills goes on. We're not stopping. We're keeping right along here with our process. So just bear with our very underwhelming backgrounds here for the next couple of weeks. But you came for Herd Mentality, so let's do it. We have a lot of great questions lined up. The first one comes from TJ. TJ says, the talk seems to be of needing to beef up the offensive line to protect Josh, which I agree with wholeheartedly. But I'm curious if the poor stats from our offensive line are a byproduct of the way Josh plays. He holds onto the ball for a long time, thus allowing more time for rushers to get home and create pressures. If Allen were getting the ball out as quick as, say, Joe Burrow, I assume his pressure stats would be substantially lower, making his offensive line appear better on paper. Perhaps there is some level of metrics or math that can be done to entertain this idea a little further. Well, TJ, you're exactly right. There is a metric that measures this. Pro Football Focus, they have a metric that tells you what percentage of the pressures are due to the offensive line and what percentage of the pressures are due to the quarterback, and whether it's the quarterback having to account for a rusher that is not accounted for within your protection scheme or holding onto the football for an amount of time that allows pressure to get home. They've found a way to quantify this. And so let me deliver this data because I think this is a good talking point. 77.3% of the pressure Josh Allen faced in 2022 was because of the offensive line. So where does that rank among the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL? 26th. 26 out of 32. That's where the Bills slot in terms of pressure Josh Allen faced that was responsibility of the offensive line. 18.8% of the pressure Josh Allen faced was charged to him, seventh highest in the NFL. And so I want to kind of get you familiar with the names that he's in the same bucket with so you can see the types of quarterbacks that, because of the style of play that they have, invite more pressure. Lamar Jackson, number one, 34% of the pressure he faces is his own fault. Jalen Hurts, number two at 27%. Justin Fields, number three at 24%. Patrick Mahomes, number four at 21.5%. Kenny Pickett from the Steelers, number five at 21.4%. Baker Mayfield, number six at 18.9%. And then there's Josh Allen. So yes, Josh Allen, because of the style of football that he plays, there's going to be more pressure. And that's why I think it's really good that Pro Football Focus parses this out in terms of responsibility to the offensive line and responsibility to the quarterback. Offensive line, 26 out of 32. That's a good spot to be. But because of the way Josh Allen plays, 18.8% of the pressure he faces is charged to him, seventh highest in the NFL. Next one here comes from David, who says, we have obviously spent quality resources to build the defensive line, arguably the most in the league, and it hasn't had that desired effect. What do you personally blame that on up front? Is it scouting of talent, coaching of said young talent, etc.? And what would your strategy be to fix that unit? Thank you again for all that you do. So in anticipation of answering this question, I went through and I considered the defensive line investments that the Bills have made over the years, really kind of since 2017, and considered what was good, what was bad, and what was okay. Because it's not all bad, and it's not all good, and some of it's just okay. And I think kind of taking inventory of all of it gives us good perspective. So I think good investments in the defensive line, or investments that have proven to be good, Gregory Rousseau, I really liked where he's headed. I think a lot of growth in year two. Daquan Jones, we all agree that's a great signing. Von Miller, that's good. Shaq Lawson, bringing him back. I think the decision to let him walk, letting him go get his three-year, $30 million contract, and then bringing him back less than 3 years later on the deal that they did, I think was good. Jordan Phillips, I think it was good, just like Shaq Lawson. Good assessment of letting him walk, good assessment of bringing him back. Harrison Phillips, I think, is a third-round pick, wound up being a really good nose tackle for the Bills. That is a good nose tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. I think that's good. I think okay. I would put Tim Settle as okay. I put Starlo Tulele as okay. I think the injury stuff there and him opting out and COVID and all that really kind of took away from him, but I think he was okay. And Quentin Jefferson, I think he was okay. Played out of position his 1 year with the Bills. I think if he was a three tech and not a one tech, it would have been a different story. Now, when it comes to the bad, there's some stuff here that we don't like. Vernon Butler, I'd say that's bad. Mario Addison, bad, right? Not necessarily that he wasn't a serviceable player, but the contract that the Bills gave him and the production that they got was not what we're looking for. I would say to an extent I put Ed Oliver here, and Ed Oliver could probably go into okay, but what kind of moves you more towards bad with Ed Oliver is that after him in the draft was Christian Wilkins and Jeffrey Simmons and Dexter Lawrence, and I think all three of them have been more impactful players than Ed Oliver. I think Ed Oliver is a solid starting three tech in the NFL, but is he a high impact, consistently disruptive, dominant player that you want in the top 10, especially with those defensive tackles after him? No. And so that's why I put him in this bucket. Trent Murphy, bad, right? Bad signing. AJ Epenesa has not proven to be a great second round pick. And the same thing with Boogie Basham. So there's some good, a good amount of bad, and some okay. And I think that's important for us to consider this. So I don't know that it's any one thing other than the Bills have invested a lot here, and some of it works out, some of it doesn't. And I think that's pretty indicative of roster building across the board. I think the Bills, you'd like to see more hits in the draft, right? I think that's where I see some commonality in the bad. Oliver, Epenesa, Basham. But you also got Rousseau and Harrison Phillips, right? So it all balances out to an extent. And I think when I kind of come back to with our disappointment in the defensive line is, it was banged up all year. We never saw on the field a healthy Rousseau, Oliver, and Miller at the same time. For the two quarters against the Rams in the first game? And we saw what that looked like. It looked really good. And so I'm very mindful of that. And, we go to the Bengals game, and you didn't have Vaughn. You didn't have Daquan Jones. You didn't have Jordan Phillips playing with one arm, basically. Rousseau was never quite the same after the high ankle sprain. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to consider here. It's not as bad as it seems. It's never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems. And so that's what I'd say about this overall concern about the Bills, how much they prioritize the D-line, and what the results have been. Now, the other part of your question was, what would your strategy be to fix the unit? I'd keep investing. And I know that turns some people off where you hear comments like, well, look where that's gotten the Bills. Well, okay, it's not fixed. It's not where you want it to be. So you don't just stop because and hasn't worked out, you got to figure it out. It matters. It's a big part of winning football. And so I think the Bills continue to have more work to do when it comes to their defensive line. Bart says, interesting that two of the people I follow closest for Bills analysis are yourself and Joe Biscaglia. What I find interesting is that you both indicate coordinators not getting it done this year, but you both feel coordinators on opposite sides of the ball need to go. I'm not a scorched earth guy, but I think both should be explored. Would love to hear your thoughts on changing both coordinators. I like this question from Bart here because it provoked me to do a little research. And I looked at the playoff teams this year. And what's interesting is that when you go to the championship round, the four teams in the championship round, the Bengals, Chiefs, 49ers, and Eagles, among those four teams, zero first-year coordinators. Zero first-year coordinators. All your final four included four teams that had at least 1 year of experience with their coordinators. Now go to the divisional round and the four teams that were eliminated in the divisional round, the Bills, Jaguars, Giants, and Cowboys. Three of those four did have a first-year coordinator. The Bills, Jags, and Giants. The Cowboys did not. Go to the wild card round. You had six teams eliminated in the wild card round. The Dolphins, Ravens, Chargers, Vikings, Bucks, and Seahawks. Four of those six had first-year coordinators. The two that didn't were the Chargers and the Bucks. That's pretty interesting to me. And so I say all that to say that I'm pushing back on this idea of changing both coordinators. I think that's fan-driven. I really do. I don't think the Bills are going to move on from Ken Dorsey. I think there's a chance Leslie Frazier could be moved on from, but don't you feel like we would have heard that by now? That was the coordinator that I was more interested in moving on from. I think Ken Dorsey replicating a lot of the success year over year, getting a year of experience under his belt as the guy that, oh, by the way, Josh Allen wants to be his offensive coordinator, that was something that I was willing to let kind of play out and see how they can build upon the foundation that was laid last year. I've got four playoff games where Leslie Frazier's defense had a meltdown. That's a significant sample size that says to me, hey, I'd like to have some new leadership here on the defense. So that's why I leaned into Leslie. But I think it's pretty something to consider here, this data that I uncovered, that none of the final four had first-year coordinators. Of the teams eliminated in the divisional round, three of the four had first-year coordinators, and of the six teams eliminated in the wildcard round, four of those six had first-year coordinators. Today's episode is brought to you by Ultimate Football GM. You've heard me talk about this mobile game app, and I can't tell you how much fun I'm having competing against my fellow Locked On NFL hosts. In fact, shout out to Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers, who was our Locked On NFL champion. Well, now it's your turn to compete, but more on that later. Have you ever dreamed of becoming an NFL GM and managing your football franchise? Well, your dream can come true, and this game is definitely for you. You'll manage every strategic aspect of your team, play through the season, and lead your team to glory by trying to build a dynasty. With Ultimate Football GM, you're responsible for controlling the destiny of your franchise by hiring the right coaches and coordinators, trading players, navigating your franchise through free agency and the draft with all the ups and downs of a season. All of this in a challenging and realistic game world. Ultimate Football GM is completely free and playable offline, on the go, as you want and when you want to. We've actually created a Locked On League for you to compete against Locked On fans all over the world. Can you be the ultimate Locked On Football GM? Choose the Locked On League in the app to join, and you can create a football dynasty. Locked On Bills listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo code Locked On in the game store. That's Locked On, so make sure to check it out today. To download the game, just visit ultimate-gm.com or look it up on the app stores. That's ultimate-gm.com. Ultimate Football GM, start your dynasty today. All right, next one today comes from Kyle, who says, what was the plan for Terrell Bernard? In a base 4-2-5 defense, he should never see the field. was Bean trying to protect against a potential Edmonds slash Milano injury? Is he an Edmonds replacement in 2023? I refuse to believe he was drafted to simply be a core special teamer and outside linebacker in a traditional 4-3 defense. What do you think was Brandon Bean's vision for this draft pick? Kyle, I've been confused about the pick since the moment it was made. And my reaction to the pick, because you know I was doing a live stream, a live broadcast, the draft went viral. I was not on board with the pick. I didn't love Terrell Bernard at Baylor, and I certainly didn't love him in the third round to the Bills. I think he's a gap shooter. He's got some good straight line athleticism, but I don't think he's a good processor. And I think it says a lot that he got a chance to play a game. And then when the Bills had another injury at linebacker, they signed A.J. Klein off the street, and he played 100% of the snaps over Terrell Bernard when they needed that depth. It's a pretty strong indictment on Bernard, who I think was really underwhelming throughout preseason and during the regular season. It's a pick that confuses me. It's one that I've been critical of since it happened. And I'm anxious to figure it out. I thought it could bring some scheme diversity where they would be more willing to use him as a big nickel, play some more base defense, but that never really happened. And maybe that will be the case moving forward. Maybe he is the Tremaine Edmonds replacement, which honestly scares me a lot. I think he's more of a Matt Milano replacement, but Matt Milano's signed for the next several seasons. That's not really something that you'd be thinking of. So there had to have been a vision here. I don't personally see it. And so I'm as confused as anyone when it comes to Terrell Bernard in the third round last year. Bills WZA says, I feel that this season was just too much pressure for the Bills and their fans. Expectations were way too high, and I imagine that may have taken a toll on the team. I think coming in a bit more under the radar next season is going to help this team's mindset. Do you agree? Maybe so. I mean, the hype was warranted. The way that the team played in the playoffs last year and how they were able to improve the roster in the offseason made them the consensus Super Bowl favorites. I understand why that happened. Was it too much pressure? I don't know. They went 13-3. I think that there's just a little bit more variance and luck to football than I think a lot of people are willing to acknowledge. And any team that wins the Super Bowl had some things go their way along the way. Go look at any run that's ever happened. And it just didn't happen for the Bills. They didn't have it against Cincinnati. They didn't have it. I'm not willing to say that it was too much pressure for the Bills and their fans. That pressure is something that they've earned. They didn't have it against Cincinnati. No Lackin says, I recently did some research, and in the last 23 years, the Super Bowl favorite has only won three times. Tom Brady in 18 and 16, and Peyton Manning in 2006. It almost feels like being named the Super Bowl favorite is bad luck. What were your initial feelings on us being named Super Bowl favorites? Do you feel like something like this can affect your season drastically before it ever happens? Kind of similar to the question that was just brought up there, but here's the deal. I thought Sean McDermott did a good job throughout the summer when this was continuously asked of him, these expectations. I thought he did a really good job of kind of putting it down. It's like, hey, we have to prove it, right? Football games aren't won on paper. He said this type of stuff over and over again. I think they had the right mindset. It just didn't happen. And because it didn't happen, we can look at some of the flaws and issues along the way that prevented it from happening, but they just didn't have it against Cincinnati. Hopefully they're better for this. Hopefully they go into next season with a big chip on their shoulder and with a lot to prove. But it's a disappointing end to a season where I think there's a lot of people that believe that the Bills were going to win the Super Bowl. And I thought they could. And I've had good conversations with my wife about this. My wife actually said, Joe, I wasn't prepared for them to not win it. And she took the loss. She took the loss to the Bengals pretty tough. It's hard. Only one team ends their season happy. One. One team. You either don't make the playoffs and you stink and you're bad and you're mad. You lose in the playoffs, which, as we know, sucks. Or you lose in the Super Bowl, and that's bad too. One team ends their season happy. 2022 Bills, they like 31 other teams that will not end their season or did not end their season happy. Brian says, I constantly hear about the importance of winning a Super Bowl in the window where the quarterback is on their rookie deal because of how much more money that allows you to spend on the rest of the team. It makes sense, but I'm not too sure how many times that has actually played out. I looked at all the Super Bowl matchups since 2011, which are unfortunately dominated by Tom Brady, and of those 11 matchups, only two quarterbacks on a current era rookie deal won the Super Bowl, Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. And five have made it to the Super Bowl, Wilson twice, Goff, Mahomes, and Burrow. So while I can see how the rookie deal is important, I feel like it's wildly overstated and perhaps not as important as having Tom Brady as your quarterback. All kidding aside, having an elite veteran quarterback can have just as much of a positive effect as the extra cap space. Brian, I'm with you. I'm with you. It comes down to paying the right quarterbacks, right? You can commit a ton of cap space to a quarterback that can't elevate. And I think there's some pretty obvious examples of bad quarterback contracts out there. So it starts with paying the right quarterback. Josh Allen is paying the right quarterback. Pat Mahomes is paying the right quarterback. Joe Burrow will certainly fall into that category when he gets his extension this offseason. But it's also about paying the right supporting cast, right? You put yourself in a position where your margin for error is smaller, right? You can't have bad contracts, and you have to hit on draft picks. And so certainly you're going to be the most talented while your quarterback is on a rookie deal. But that doesn't mean, as you've provided with great evidence, Brian, that it doesn't mean that you can't do it. You have to pay the right quarterback, pay the right supporting cast, hit on draft picks. But this idea that just build up this unbelievable remainder of team and then just insert any quarterback, I mean, come on now. That's kind of a silly idea, but there's a lot of people that believe that. What's funny is we knew this was going to happen. But now Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, their contracts look like absolute bargains as you see what Aaron Rodgers got and what Deshaun Watson got and what Kyler Murray got. Kyler Murray. What Herbert's going to get, what Burrow's going to get. Yeah, I'm not in on this whole don't pay quarterbacks, they're interchangeable. That's silly. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props. Plus, you can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Are you looking for a delicious treat but don't want all the fat and calories? Well, then you got to try a Built Bar. And you guys know I've been talking about Built Bars. They're so good. They're delicious. The best tasting protein bars on the planet. But what makes them so good is that they're covered in 100% real chocolate. They have great flavors, churro, peanut butter, brownie, coconut almond. And I'm not sure how they do it, but they taste like a candy bar while maintaining amazing macros. And, you know, they're super healthy for you. Only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And look, you can go to built.com and order them, but you don't have to do that anymore. You can go to Walmart or you can go to Sam's Club and pick up a box off the shelf today. So if you're close to a Sam's Club, run in and grab some Built Bars. If you're close to Walmart, you can get some there too. Try them out. You'll thank me later. These things are the best. Got a few more to get to here today. The next one comes from Eli, who says, what is your opinion on McDermott moving Spencer Brown to guard? Isn't that exactly how the downfall of Cody Ford started? Injuries, move him here, put him there, can't get used to a position, and then gets traded. Do you fear Spencer has the potential to end like Cody? I hope not. I just know he won't be Wyatt Teller, but I want one guy to be solid in that spot. Would like to hear your thoughts. First of all here, Sean McDermott is not committed to moving Spencer Brown to guard. He was asked about that possibility, and he said, look, I don't want to rule that out, but we'd like to put a young player in a position and let him grow. And I think that was more of an indication of like, maybe, I don't want to say no, but in reality, we want him to stay at one spot, which to me signals a lesson learned from the Cody Ford situation. And look, we've got to also have to be willing to live in a world where Cody Ford just might not be that good. He's been, he got injured again with the Cardinals, was kind of ineffective when he played. Maybe Cody Ford was always just not as good as people wanted him to be. But I don't think the Bills did him any favorites by, you know, moving around as much as they did. Old Man Harris says, if the Bills drafted Jack Campbell from Iowa, would he be a cost-effective replacement with nearly the productivity? Size is similar, and he's referring to Tremaine Edmonds. So Jack Campbell is a middle linebacker from Iowa, and kind of the idea here is, could he be drafted and be a replacement for Tremaine Edmonds? Well, what Jack Campbell and Tremaine Edmonds have in common is they're both big linebackers. I think Jack Campbell's going to be 6'4", 245, 250 pounds. I don't know that he's going to have the same type of length as Tremaine Edmonds. I mean, that's pretty rare. But they do have, you know, big frames. And my comparison for Jack Campbell is actually Logan Wilson with the Bengals. And I think Jack Campbell is a smart, instinctive football player that is very good downhill, has good, you know, short, shallow zone coverage drops. But I don't think he's like a guy that you want to give a ton of real estate to or ask to play in man coverage with any level of frequency. Okay, blitzer. I think he's kind of a day two pick that I think will be a starting Mike linebacker in the NFL. But I don't think you get the range. I don't think you get the coverage range in particular with Campbell that you would with Edmonds. But you probably pick up something as a downhill run player. But the athleticism, I think, is another area where Tremaine is just on another planet. Than Jack Campbell. I think Jack Campbell's a good, solid prospect, day two guy that I think can start, but I don't think he has a chance to, he doesn't have the type of physical skill and upside that a Tremaine Edmonds would have. Matt says, a few thoughts on the season, Joe. One, after taking some time to digest the loss and understanding how disappointing a complete no-show in the playoffs was, I think Bills Mafia just needs to relax a little bit. The Bills still dominated the division, and their best game is still better or at least as good as any other team's best game. There needs to be some changes, but this isn't a blow-it-up situation, or at least not yet. Two, the Bills do need to figure out a way to get Josh more weapons, whether it is in the draft, trade, or through free agency. Out of all the frustrating performances against Cincinnati, none stood out to me more than Gabe Davis. Another terrible drop in a key spot, and though it wouldn't have mattered, it sure looked like he gave no effort on the fourth down ball Eli Apple vomit knocked away. He can stay or they can ship him out, but he has no business in a top wide receiver role for this team. Lastly, thanks for always providing a great listen between Locked On Bills and all the other Bills media. And he mentions Bruce Nolan, Greg Thompson, Anthony Quinn, Jay Spence, etc. It doesn't matter who wins it all. We've got the best media crew in the league. Thanks and go Bills. Matt, I think there's a lot of truth to everything that you said there. First of all, disappointing loss. We all don't love how the season ended, but this isn't like a blow-it-up situation. That's not what this is. And I think it's funny because some people have taken it there, and I think that's very short-sighted. Number two, I'm with you on Gabe. I'd like to see him back as a wide receiver three or a wide receiver four. And yeah, man, I appreciate what you said there about me, but there's so many great Bills content creators out there, and I think this team is well served when it comes to coverage, whether it's video, podcasting, written form. So many really, really, really outstanding people that cover the Buffalo Bills, and I'm really just thankful to be part of it, and I really appreciate the community that exists within the Bills content creators. You know, we're all friends as well, and we're all rooting for each other, and I love that about it, and I love how it serves this fan base. And so I'm really, really thankful to be part of it. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here today on the podcast. Tomorrow, we will get back on track with our performance review series. We'll get to the wide receivers. So that'll be a good conversation. So come on back, make sure that you're subscribed We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great day. Go Bills. And I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.